Hello, listeners. This podcast is hosted by International Idea. In the next minutes, we will help you make sense of what's happening today in democracy worldwide.
Hello and welcome to Peer to Peer. My name is Eric Asplund.
And my name is David Towris.
And we will be your hosts of this podcast focusing on elections. In this series, we will share knowledge, experience, and good practice through our conversations with practitioners.
This first part of our series will focus on training, education, and research in electoral administration. Each episode will include a guest who will provide insights on how the Election Commission in their country prepares frontline workers for Election Day operations and how it provides voters and other stakeholders with the information that they need to make the election a success.
I would like to introduce our first speaker, Mario Pilar Bejo Pastor, who has until recently worked for Peru's National Office of Electoral Processes, or simply OMPE, within their Electoral Information and Education Unit. Welcome, Maria, or should we call you Pilar?
Pilar is better for me. Hi, David. Hi, Eric. Thank you for this invitation.
It's wonderful to have you here, Pilar. So we're speaking to you shortly after the conclusion of Peru's general elections, and I think it's fair to say that these were elections which presented significant challenges to Peru's election trainers and educators. A number of these challenges, a difficult information environment, a polarized electorate, COVID-19, a disputed election result, are becoming increasingly widespread. And so I think our conversation today about the Peruvian experience will resonate with many across the world. And Pilar, could you begin our conversation by giving us a brief overview of Peru's general elections and the context in which they took place?
Yes, of course. Well, we have Peru is have a five-year government, very unstable, from 2016 to 2021. The general elections came before this unstable period. Country have four presidents, two congresses. We have a very unstable political situation. I think we have something like that doesn't repeat since Fujimori's government. Like 2000, a memory came again. So it was very difficult. But also we have the COVID pandemic. So
yes,
we have to organize elections with a unstable situation with COVID. So this experience was very, very particular here in Peru. Vaccines came later. So when we organize the elections, we have no vaccines at all. And mortality rates were very high here in Peru. So in that context, we celebrate elections April 11 this year. And we were like more than 25 million of Peruvians here in Peruvian territory and approximately 1 million abroad. That vote also, no? All over the world. We have to elect president by president and 130 members of the Congress and five members of representatives of the Andean Parliament.
So, Pilar, what was different about this election? What was the surprise?
The surprise that we have a lot of here institution that make surveys about who is going to win the election doesn't talk about Pedro Castillo or Keiko Fujimori. Only that last 2 weeks before the election, these two candidates appeared. And these two candidates went to the runoff election or to the ballotage, no? So it was a surprise, I think, to everyone here in Peru that these two candidates run off to the ballotage. So, and I was telling you that from April 11 to June 6 that took place the runoff election, the country was polarized, but very polarized. For example, if you support Pedro Castillo, they accuse you of you're a communist, you are a terrorist. And if you support Keiko Fujimori, you are a traitor, or like it was like a little a battle. Yes. That we have in Peru in those months. It was horrible. So
thanks.
Social media, yes?
Social media, yeah, go ahead.
You hear me, okay. Social media was terrible, was also polarized. Communication, the media was also polarized. Very few media was not polarized, but most of that was polarized, and they attacked Pedro Castillo, telling that he was inexperienced, he was a communist, all of that. So there was a very difficult context.
Yeah, no? You give us a really rich picture there of a very challenging environment. Thank you for that. And I think we sort of see certainly patterns sort of in Peru that we're seeing elsewhere too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It would be, I think, really helpful for our listeners to know a little bit more about Peru's electoral management structure. Pilar, could you describe it for us and just very briefly and tell us a little bit about how responsibilities are allocated within it?
Okay. Here in Peru, we have a free body electoral management. In other countries, there is one body, and in some countries are two bodies. Here we have three principal management bodies. One is the OMPE, the National Office of Electoral Process, that organizes electoral processes and other referendums, for example. Then we have the Jurado Nacional de Elecciones, that's National Jury of Elections, that is in charge of the electoral justice. And then we have the third one, the National Registry of Identification and Civil Status, RENIEC, that is the one that is responsible for the civil registry and the electoral roll.
That's great. And which of those three electoral management bodies is responsible for training and education? And
okay. OMPE, the National Office of Electoral Process, is in charge of training citizens, also the polling station people that work for the election that day, and also the all the people that we OMPE hired to work for the election.
Great. Pilar, I'd like to start our conversation about learning and development with the training of Peru's temporary polling station workforce. Now, you've already said a little bit about this, but I think our audience would also be interested to know a few of the details. For instance, we know that the size of the workforce is very large, around 500,000 workers who are manning the polling stations during the at least the runoff elections. And secondly, the limited previous experience that this workforce possesses given the fact that, and correct me if I'm wrong, they are randomly selected for each election?
Yes, they are. The police station workers are random selected every electoral process. They are citizens above 18 year old, up to 65 year old approximately, and they are random elected. So they are not the same for every election. They are different for every election, so that's why we have to train them.
Right, Maria. So I was thinking that it would be really good for our listeners to know how OMPE typically delivers training for these people, for your frontline workers.
Okay. Typically, with no pandemic, COVID pandemic, we organize like face-to-face training sessions. We also have our website, a landing page where we put all our training materials, videos, booklets, and also we train trainers all over the country to organize these training sessions for the polling station workers. With the pandemia, this changed a little bit. We implemented a online course, online training sessions that works because we get along to a lot of polling station workers, more than if we do like a face-to-face session. But I think the quality is not the same. So people are not very used to here in Peru to take a seriously online course. So maybe, for example, they see the video, but they don't practice. Mm. Mm. For example, that when we do a face-to-face training session, we make them practice, make them teamwork, for example. So that is better for these people than we don't have the control. We don't have the control when they take an online course, for example.
Thank you, Pilar. So I'm assuming also that there is some kind of cascade training polling officials are trained. I mean, are you providing online training for, you know, 500,000 people, or are they in turn, some of these people that are involved in these training sessions that you described, providing also training to others? Maybe you can elaborate a little bit more on how how this is actually carried out.
Yes, we have different strategies. We have a group of 150 trainers that they disperse all over the country. These trainers, like, they have a lot of experience in electoral education. They work in for OMPE, like in every electoral process. They are not permanent staff. They only work when we have an election on course, and they always when we call them, they came to work, and they are in charge to manage the training all over the country, in every region.
Right, but, and I'm guessing that some of the materials that they're using are provided by OMPE, especially if there's been any updates to procedures and so on. And I'm assuming that there were many procedural changes for in-person voting during the last election in Peru due to COVID.
Of course. Yes, of course. When, for example, with this group of trainers, we have a training, 1 week training session before they go to their region.
Right.
No? We have a one week training to update some procedures or all, and then they are in charge of managing this training. But parallel, this year we have something called OMPE Educa. It's like OMPE Teach, something like that. It was a website. In this website, we put all online courses, you know, online training sessions for polling workers, for political party representatives, for electors. So we have three courses that was, they were very like exitosos. I forgot my English word.
It's fine.
No problem.
So you said you were mentioning that OMPE also provides training to political parties. This is interesting. So
yes.
I'm assuming so OMPE provides training to various stakeholders. Maybe you could provide a little bit more information on that.
Yes, OMPE is in charge of training not only the polling station workers. We also train the political party representatives that are in every polling station the day of the election. So we have to train them on what are their rights, what are the forbidden things they can do. Because in this polarized election, for example, for the ballotage, we have a lot of political party representations in every polling station, a lot of them, because they defend the votes. So we are in charge also on training them. You know? We have materials and we have online training sessions, so videos also. So as I told you, these online training sessions called OMPE Educa or OMPE Trains You, something like that, was very successful because we have a lot of people that take the course.
Mm.
But when we make the evaluation of this, we notice that we have a lot of people that take the course, but however, the quality of what they learn wasn't too successful. I don't know if I...
No, it's fine.
You've explained yourself very well, Pilar. But I think I'd like now to sort of turn our conversation towards voter education. And I was hoping that you might be able to tell us a little bit about what responsibilities OMPE has in relation to voter education and civic education.
Okay, great. When we are in an electoral process, OMPE has a responsibility to train every voter, every citizen, on, for example, how to how to vote, why it's important to vote. We go like beyond like how to vote. So now why it's important? It's important to know the candidates, know, to research about their options and what they are the programs, for example. No?
That's really interesting. So the importance of being an active citizen and the importance, yes, the centrality of voting to that. Now, I'm also interested in how you deliver that message to the voters, okay, to the citizens. What media does OMPE use?
Well, okay, that's a great question. We have different strategies. We have audio, a lot of audio messages, like micro programs, radio micro programs.
Yes.
I don't know if I microprogram radios, not only in Spanish, but in different languages that we speak here in Peru. Because the radio in Peru is very successful because it arrives all over the country. So every family in Peru listens to the radio or have a radio. If you don't have a computer or you don't have a TV, you have a radio.
Yeah.
So for us, it's very important to make radio micro programs with all of these messages: how to vote, why is important to vote, how I research for programs of the candidates.
Yes.
All of that messages. Mm-hmm.
And
that's a.
Mm-hmm. No. Do go on, Pilar. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, sorry, it's just to finish. But this is the massive messages are in radio micro programs, but we also have in our website materials, see, and videos also. Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting. I'm also keen to know how the experience of this recent set of general elections has changed how, or whether it has changed how OMPE will approach voter education in the future, whether the challenges that you described for us so wonderfully at the start of our conversation, the informational environment and so on, whether that has changed the way that you think OMPE will approach voter education in the future.
Yes, I think that OMPE have a lot of experience from 2001 to this, like more than 25 years working on electoral processes. So I think that really, really work. For example, radio microprograms, videos, training materials that we also get impressed, but not only on the website, but we print a lot of materials, but also something like work this election was to have a bot, electoral bot in our cell phones. That was something new.
Yeah.
It works mainly in the capitals, but it was we do a pilot on that, you know, like frequently questions for different electoral actors, and I think we can in the future it would work.
Fascinating. Thank you.
Pilar, you said earlier that there was a lot of that Peru is a very multilingual country. Now I'm assuming that you know that also brings about certain challenges. I mean, not only is Peru, yes, multilingual, but also it's a multicultural country. Now, uh-huh, it would be very interesting to hear a little bit from you. You know what the challenges were for OMPE in this regard.
Thank you. Yes, we have a very nice challenge on this. It's true that Peru is a very multilingual and multicultural country. In Peru, we have three official languages that are in our constitution: Spanish, Aymara, and Quechua. These are three, but we have like more than 40 languages all over the country, Amazon languages also. So the first challenge was to implement an intercultural training line. We have not implemented something like this in past years. So this is the first challenge. We translate different materials, training materials, in the six languages that were more speak in Peru. So we select six languages: Quechua, Aymara, Aguaruna, Guajun. Aguaruna, Guajun, they are like Amazon languages here in Peru. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of Amazon people that speak different languages. So we select the six more spoken. And we translate, for example, the radio microprograms were translated in these six languages. And we have some training materials that also were translated. And something very important is we have to hire, it's like necessary, like mandatory, to hire people that speak these languages, like trainers that speak these languages. That was like something for me, it was the key of the successful of training in these areas that are very far away from capitals. So this the other challenge was that we were in a pandemic context. So in many territories here in Peru, they haven't internet connection. So at all.
Okay.
So these people we hire, they have to go there and speak to people, train people face to face, in person.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But something interesting, something interesting is that I live in Ompe intercultural training material catalog. I can share this with you. It was very interesting because in this training materials catalog, we have all what we do with this intercultural training line.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I'm assuming that this material is updated ahead of every election.
It's updated.
Yeah, it's updated.
Yes.
Into every these election, six main languages then?
Sorry?
Pilar, is it...
I lost.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm assuming then it's translated into these six languages or that you mentioned.
Yes, in these six languages.
That's super interesting. Now, Pilar, before we round off, I would like to mention that you've written a case study on training and education in Peru. I just wanted to mention this to our listeners that this case study is available mm-hmm. on International Ideas website.
It's very good. I can vouch for it, certainly.
Thank you, you both. And I want to say that it is very important that the work of the electoral bodies should go beyond the electoral instruction. There is no other institution, for example, here in Peru, that provides electoral and civic education in the country. And is so necessary in the current context, in the current political context. We need to form citizens who are actively participate in electoral processes and electoral life and in political life. So we need that, and I think the MBs can do that. job.
Great. Thank you.
Pilar, thank you so much for your time. So that's it for today. In the upcoming International Idea episode of Peer to Peer, we'll be talking to Doina Bordianu and Natalia Riuras about training and education during the Moldovan July 2021 parliamentary elections. For any suggestions or recommendations, feel free to email us at elections@idea.int. My name is David Tauris.
And my name is Eric Asplund. And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Democracy Ideas podcast. Keep following International Idea on social media. We need all of you to participate in constructing better societies. Goodbye.